Hi, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Steve, and today we will be continuing our transportation article this month called Simulating the Next Spacecraft. We're talking about astronauts going into space, but before they go into space, they have to practice being in space, and they do that on the ground here on Earth. It's much cheaper and much safer. With me in the studio again is Lois. Welcome back, Lois.
Hi, Steve. It's great to be back.
Yeah, glad you're here. And also, Gordon, glad you're here, too. Welcome back.
Thank you, Steve. Hello, everyone.
Well, as is our custom here, I like to go back to the first day and just touch on one thing to help us review a little bit of what we've learned from yesterday's lesson. Lois, I'll ask you to go first.
Sure. Well, this has been a great lesson so far. We've only done day one, Steve, and I think I just liked all the description in this article and trying to relate it to us earthbound humans, I like to say. And I think when we opened up with telling us about time spent maybe on a highway or the Interstate 70 and hurtling through traffic on it, I kind of was thinking of the fastest motorcycle you've ever seen or been on that can actually get maybe between the cars or maybe illegally get on that shoulder or whatever.
Yeah.
And really, truly feel like you're hurtling through traffic.
I'm glad you said that because I wanted to talk about that word a little yesterday. I love that word, hurtling. It gives me the picture of something going so fast, it's out of control.
Right.
Right? There's no control. Right. And so that's the idea that the author is trying to paint a picture for us, is that there's something that's out of your control. And when you're an astronaut taking off, again, on a rocket, you don't have any control. You are hurtling through space, through the atmosphere.
Exactly. Yeah. It kind of reminds you of any film clips you've seen or movies about the speed of sound, breaking the speed sound barrier.
Yes.
And on the salt flats in the western or midwest United States. And just, I have a picture of that in my mind.
Right, right. How about you, Gordon?
Well, I really enjoyed hearing yesterday about this new craft that NASA are developing called the Starliner, which, if things go well, will be flying next year, 2017. And it's going to be a reusable space taxi or spacecraft that's going to be able to go up there, up to the International Space Station, and then come back down to Earth, get patched up, get spiffed up.
Yep, and spiffed then, up.
And then used again. And that, I think that's exciting. I look forward in a year's time to hearing on the news about this spacecraft.
Yes, I do as well. Now remember, everybody, sending rockets and spacecraft into space, it takes billions of dollars, right? And so the NASA and other government agencies, they want to make sure that their money is well spent, that it's not wasted. And so the best way they can do that, or one of the ways they do that, is to practice. Make the astronauts practice, practice, and practice. Why do they want astronauts to go into these simulators, Lois, and make the ride as familiar as possible?
Well, we learned that it really basically has to become second nature to them. They don't want any surprises for the astronauts when they're traveling. And, traveling seems like such a simple word to describe this because we can't even comprehend at all traveling like this. And yet these astronauts have to be prepared for the worst scenario, but also they can have the best of times as well,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And it can go very smoothly with no problems at all. But any of us that know history of spacecraft around the world, there has been some tragedies, and they don't want to have that ever happen again.
That's right. Good point. All right, everybody, I think it's time to open our magazines to page 13, and let's read together the second day, Simulating the Next Spacecraft, under Form, Fit, and Feel.
Form, Fit, and Feel. To the astronauts inside, the simulator must look and function like the real thing down to the stars outside the windows. The designers simulate the big flash of light that astronauts see as they round the Earth into the sunshine every 90 minutes. To simulate the plunge into darkness, the simulator first slowly raises the lighting level outside the viewports, then abruptly shuts it off. The idea is to train and train and train the astronauts until everything, even emergencies, becomes intuitive. There should be no thought of where the switch is. You just reach to it, Meisinger said. So it's vital that the control and display simulators be precise mimics. Proven technology. Meisinger is an enthusiast for the program and for simulators. I have the best video game in the world, he said. Simulators do get the job done, said Glenn Lightsey, an expert in space vehicle control. It's a proven technology for training astronauts, he said. But there are some hardware failures that you can't simulate for, and that you can never recover from.
Okay, let's talk about the simulator now. Again, this is the machine that astronauts and aviators of all kinds are put into to practice flying and practice getting familiar with emergency situations and all those buttons that you talked about yesterday that are in an airline cockpit. So, Lois, please take us into the first paragraph.
Okay, so we have, it starts off with form, fit, and feel. To the astronauts inside, the simulator must look and function like the real thing, down to the stars outside the windows.
Pretty cool, right?
Pretty cool. And you know what? I was just, when you were talking about the simulator once again, Steve, I was going to say, it is possible lots of times for anybody to get a look at an aircraft simulator. So if you have the opportunity, you have a friend or relative or somebody that you know in that type of business, just talk to them about it.
Yeah.
It might work out for you. And that way, not only are we bringing you this article, but you can maybe have a little bit of a hands-on approach
with
this.
Good point, yeah. Try to get inside a simulator. Just to sit in it for a second would be a thrill
for me. It's a big thrill just to see the outside of one. My first time seeing the outside of a simulator for, I think, a Boeing 747, I was like, look at the size of that thing. So it actually looks like its own little spacecraft.
And I'm sure it's on hydraulic.
Yes, it is.
Legs and all
hydraulic
that.
Lifters, yeah, and everything.
Sure. Yeah. And we'll talk about that in a moment. Gordon, what do the designers do in line 3?
Yeah, one of the things I found amazing about this is they simulate a lot of the things that astronauts are going to feel by using light. So they talk about here a big flash of light that they use to simulate the spacecraft going round the Earth and back into the sunlight from the dark side of the Earth and then into the sun. And yeah, they use a lot of lighting in this in the simulators to get as close as they can to the feel of what it will actually be like.
That's right. Remember yesterday we learned that when an astronaut is taking off, all the senses are being heightened, including the sense of sight. And one of the things that they're going to experience as they travel around the Earth are these huge contrasts between dark and light, right? Because they're traveling around the Earth 90 minutes a time, and they're going into the bright section where the sun is shining, then pretty much immediately into darkness.
Right.
You know, round and round. And so the simulators help to make the astronauts familiar with that. Well, to simulate the plunge into darkness, the simulator slowly raises the lighting level outside the viewports and then abruptly shuts it off. So there we see again, the lights, as you mentioned, Gordon, are a big part of this training. How about the next paragraph, Lois?
Well, it says the idea is to train and train and train the astronauts until everything, even emergencies, becomes intuitive. So intuitive here basically means it's part of your nature now. You just know that this could happen and I know how to deal with it.
Yeah, sure.
You don't have to think about it. It's just there.
Second nature.
Second
right?
nature, right.
What is something that is intuitive to you right now? Can you think of something that you don't think about doing?
Well, for me, it's actually probably cooking. You know, like last night I went home to make dinner for my husband. I just open the fridge and I go, oh, I have these five things or six things. Oh, we'll have this for dinner.
Right.
And it's just part of me and I know what to do. And then I put together and we had turkey stew last night.
Okay. So you didn't put a lot of thought into it because it's intuitive.
It's just there.
Yeah.
Well, I'm definitely not like that with cooking. I love cooking and I love doing that, but I think everything through and carefully. For me, something that would be intuitive would be driving a car.
Yes.
I've done it since I was 17, when you can legally do that in the UK. And after many years, you drive naturally. Sometimes you can drive somewhere and you've got something else on your mind and you're like, I didn't really remember driving that journey. I know I was safe, but I was thinking about something else and my hands and feet just did what they had to do.
It's like your body goes on autopilot.
Right. Like I'm like Gordon, I love to drive. I actually find it relaxing. But for me, sometimes it's like also a bicycle. Sometimes I haven't ridden a bicycle for years. And you get on a bicycle and it's like, how do I know to just balance and be so comfortable on a bicycle right away? But it's once again like that second nature thing. It just feels comfortable.
Good point.
Like putting on a pair of socks.
Yeah. Well, friends, we hope that speaking English is intuitive to you, that you can go back and forth from your mother tongue into English and that it would be second nature for you. That would be something that we strive for, being intuitive with that. So, back to the astronauts. It's vital that the control and display simulators be precise mimics. And a mimic is another word for something like a copy or a replica. Mm. And you said, Lois, I keep saying that. I was just in the studio with Doris.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And tell us how important it is that it be exact.
Well, because everything does have to be intuitive, second nature, you cannot have that button or knob or switch out of position in any way because you have to just be able to reach and I'm going to touch it and I'm going to click it on or whatever.
Sometimes without even looking.
Exactly,
at it,
without even looking because, you know, sometimes when I have been on the flight deck with my husband and I watch him fly, I'm just like, oh, he's just doing this like, wow, like it's just nothing to him. But it is something, but it's intuitive. He just knows to do that. That's where that is up above. You know, they always say pilots just reach up above and touch all these knobs and switches and know exactly what they're for. And
that's amazing.
Yeah.
How long has he been piloting?
Over 30 years.
Okay, so certainly it should be intuitive by now.
I guess he started flying when he was about 18 or 19 years old.
I wonder with pilots how long it takes for a commercial airline pilot to feel like it has become second nature.
I think, you know, I've talked about this with my husband. For some, it does come quicker than others.
Sure.
There really are women and men born to fly. And it's just in them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you will meet someone who's been like their chief pilot or whatever, and they will comment, you were just made to fly. Yeah. So.
And then there are those who aren't.
Exactly. There are those
but they still
that aren't
fly, right?
And still fly. Or there's those that take a lot longer in the training,
sure,
but do eventually become outstanding pilots.
Okay. Our next paragraph, Gordon Meisinger, talks about the simulator as what? He compares it to a
video game.
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool?
Make a game out of it. Yeah, this is what I think of as simulators. It's like the most advanced video game that you can think of. And like we play video games on computers or on TVs with a little controller. Now, if you imagine blowing it up with switches everywhere and you're actually in a cabin that looks like an airplane or a spacecraft. It sounds so much fun. I want to get in one of these simulators if I have the opportunity.
I would too. I think video game makers have caught on to this, and you see them in arcades now where you don't just stand at a console. Sometimes you get on a fake motorcycle and you go to the left and right and you're driving.
Right.
It's kind of like a simulation. Or you get inside this thing and you have a steering wheel in front of you. They're trying to recreate that feel that you are in the real thing.
I was at the computer market on Monday, and it was incredible because the computer market in downtown Taipei is always getting better, and I love it. And here was somebody doing virtual reality, and she was a girl, and she was having some incredible experience like that, like some kind of simulation or something. And she was, like, screaming and yelling out loud.
No kidding.
And she couldn't help herself, and all of us were standing around watching her.
So what was it, just a helmet, a mask?
Yeah, just like the I call it the kind of like the eye set. Like, it's like just a partial helmet, but it actually just a big band.
Funny.
And it was around her, and she was being entertaining to all us. I realized she was being entertained, but we felt like we were being entertained.
But nobody else could see what she was seeing.
You could see her trying to move and step, and I was like, wonder what she's seeing inside.
That's cool.
Maybe that's the future of these space simulators. They won't have to build these big simulators and stuff. They could just put on a pair of glasses for you, and you can see it all through there.
Yeah, perhaps. Well, they've been doing this for many, many years. I would say since the 1950s in the Mercury program, when NASA was just getting started. It's a proven technology for training astronauts. But there are some hardware failures that you can't simulate for. And this is kind of a sad ending to this paragraph. And that you can never recover from.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me think of the Challenger.
Exactly.
In 1986. I don't know where you were. I remember that day.
I sure remember that day.
In high school. And something went terribly wrong in that space shuttle launch. And, of course, everyone died on that one. So a very, very sad time. But through these simulating training sessions, they hope to avoid that, of course. That's one reason they do these things, so that tragedies like that don't happen again. Okay, let's go to the second half now of this lesson. Let's pick up the reading under Taking a Vacation to Space.
Taking a Vacation to Space. Less certain is whether the Starliner will have a destination other than the International Space Station. Space tourism is a possibility, Lightsey said, with the wealthy paying fortunes to circle the planet. Boeing is working with Space Adventures, a company that hopes to sell trips to space. Private space stations are another possibility. Bigelow Aerospace of Las Vegas is developing what it calls the first private space habitat. It's billed as a location for science and manufacturing research in zero gravity, as well as a tourist stop. We're seeing lots of activity in the commercial space area. It's been ramping up for the past 10 years, Lightsey said. Still, it's unclear if private industry will pay the price for science performed in space.
All right, friends, if you've just joined us, we are in our transportation feature for this month, talking about simulators and sending people into space, sending astronauts into space. In this particular section now, we'll talk about sending maybe you into space. Wouldn't that be great? I would certainly love to go to space. But as I said before, I get sick too easily. Mm. But maybe I'll try it.
I have a stomach of steel, so I
you
think
do?
I do. I was always one of the persons that'd be at the amusement park riding the worst terrible rides.
Oh man. How about you, Gordon?
I think I could handle the jolting and stuff. Well, I mean, I've been told that it's like nothing you've experienced, so I of course can't say that I'm definitely sure, but I'm okay on boats and stuff, so I could handle that part of it, and it would be amazing. I just can't ever imagine spending the amount of money that it costs to go.
Yeah.
To go.
Maybe you guys have seen those things where they try to create film in zero gravity, and so they bring up those planes up into the space, and then they climb, and then they dip down, and they have, like, what is it, 30 seconds
yeah,
or 60 seconds
yeah,
of zero gravity?
Yeah, I think about 60 seconds of zero gravity.
Yeah, I think that would be so fun, but there's always, like, I think somebody getting sick on that, right?
Yeah, there is.
I think they might even call that, like, the vomit comet. That's not a fun thing to be sick on. But taking a vacation into space is becoming, it seems to be becoming a reality, and it might be coming closer and closer to reality as time goes on. The Starliner will have a destination other than the International Space Station. We'll wait and see about that. But certainly the U.S. government, if it can use the Starliner for space tourism, it could help generate a lot of income that it would need to do
right.
its scientific research.
Yeah, I'm just like Gordon, though. I just can't imagine spending that kind of money on myself to have an experience. Now, if they brought back the Concorde, that's a different thing. I always wanted to ride the Concorde.
Okay, tell us a little bit what that is.
Well, Gordon probably knows that airplane better than me, but it's an airplane that they put out of service probably about 20 years ago, maybe 25 now, and it went the speed of sound, and you could get to London from New York, am I right? 3 hours?
Yeah, it's the fastest commercial plane ever built. It was a combination of Britain and France.
Yes.
I think it wasn't 20 years ago it was put out. It was fairly recent.
Maybe 10, right?
Yeah, maybe 10. Because I remember it being like the last flight and it being quite a big thing. And so I must have been an adult or late teens when that happened. So
I remember them offering it would be like the quickest flight, but it was done out of Toronto, out of Pearson International, and they were just doing this quick thing like from Pearson to New York City and then back again. But back when they were doing that, it was about $700 US, and that was a lot of money.
Sure,
then.
Still is today.
And I wanted my husband to do it because we had just recently married, and I was like, you should just do that. It's just such a, I don't know, that plane was so unique looking.
Yeah.
It also had very tight quarters for the passengers.
Sure, yeah.
I remember hearing them when I was younger.
The booms.
Yeah, the booms. You could hear it breaking the speed of sound. Living in the south of England, you could hear them.
On a regular basis.
Yeah, because we live close to the airports down in the south. So, and it was amazing. I've seen pictures of them, and they are beautiful spacecraft.
Yeah.
They had to stop them because although the technology exists and it's possible, it's not really a practical like expense
at
a commercial
money.
Level. Yeah, they were losing money. It was something they could do, but it just cost too much.
Right. Well, that's not a problem if you're wealthy, and if you have a fortune to pay, you can circle the planet.
Mm.
I think some people are doing that now. There are some spacecraft or planes that are going up to the upper reaches in the Earth's atmosphere and stratosphere and getting pretty close.
Sounds like something Richard Branson would have.
Yeah, something like he did. And people are paying big money to do
exactly.
that.
Yeah.
Boeing is working with Space Adventures, and that's a company that hopes to sell trips to space. So if there's money to be made, of course, there's going to be companies popping up trying to get in on this. Take us into the next paragraph, please, Lois, on the top of the right-hand page.
It says private space stations are another possibility. Bigelow Aerospace of Las Vegas is developing what it calls the first private space habitat. That sounds extremely interesting.
When you say habitat, what do you mean?
Well, I mean what our vocabulary focus says is the natural environment in which an animal or plant usually lives. So it is your own little living spot or living pod.
So they're going to try to recreate the living environment of a human in outer space.
Right.
That's a big challenge.
It is a big challenge.
I like to go swimming. I like to go hiking. They're going to recreate all that? Probably not. Probably it'll just be, I don't know, some tubes and stuff like you see in those mice contraptions.
Yes.
And
yeah. A couple of rooms maybe.
Your own little maze.
Yeah, I'll have a maze.
Yeah.
And I'll eat my dinner from, it'll be a pill form dinner or something.
I love the idea of there being different space stations circling the planet though. So at the moment there's one, and I know we've had others before, but imagine if there's four or five different like little towns circling the planet, and you can move from each one.
Wow.
It'd be amazing, wouldn't it? The humankind really taking to the stars.
Yeah, certainly that would be phenomenal.
Well, and we know it's a real draw for humans just because of the space movies that are still coming out in this decade and how successful every single one of them is. So people have maybe their imagination running wild, who knows, or it's just a real interest to them, or anyone who has, I think, into engineering, or if they're into aviation, or stargazers, or whatever, this is a draw for them, for sure.
Yes. And so these habitats wouldn't just be for living, they'd be for doing science, and maybe manufacturing research in zero gravity, as well as a tourist stop. So it will serve some multi-purposes.
Yeah, I think you'll have to be productive, right? It sounds like that's going to be one of the outcomes of it.
Yes, yes. Final paragraph, it says we're seeing lots of activity in the commercial space area, and we mentioned this a little bit earlier. There was talk of it. I remember when talk just started happening, maybe 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, with Branson and other people talking about sending private spacecraft up into space. This was the time when the shuttle was kind of winding down and people were thinking, well, what's next?
Right.
What's next? And so some of the private people were thinking, hey, we'll take this up and we'll make some profit at the same time.
Exactly. You know, I had an experience when we landed in Heathrow Airport my first time 3 years ago. There was a mothballed Concorde airplane there. And I was like looking at it and going, when's it going to fly again?
Yeah.
Like, and you know, with fuel prices really dropping in the last 18 months, I keep going, I wonder if they're thinking about it. Now, I have been told there are thoughts about it, but it would be a private investor.
Oh, sure.
So,
okay.
We'll see what happens.
All right. Well, everybody, I think we're out of time again. I had such a wonderful time talking about this topic. I love talking about space and traveling into space, and I'm glad you guys were able to join us. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, friends, until our next lesson, my name is Steve, and for all of us at Advance, thanks for joining us. See you next time.